If your knees check the weather before you do, time to check out Joint Relief Institute. Fast, FDA-approved pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain. 720 WGN, thanks for joining us. If you're stuck in traffic and you're thinking, well, I don't know much about the blues, let me introduce you to Kenny Wayne Shepherd. Kenny, welcome to the show. As someone who has sat in your audience several times, bought your music, and admired you from afar, it's really good to actually have you on my show.
Thanks for having me.
So this is amazing. 30 years, you come back with an album that you wrote at 15, 16, 17 years old. You earned the respect of legendary bluesmen, and now you're coming back looking at 30 years of history on the road, playing that music. Not every song of that album. Many of them didn't make your show, but they will now on this new tour. What do you know now, 30 years later, that you didn't know when you were 16 or 17?
Oh, my gosh.
A lot, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's a long conversation, but since we're just talking about music, even that is a long conversation. I mean, there's so much experience, you know, over the last 30 years, and just anything, I think we can all agree that, you know, experience is the best teacher in life. And so doing shows, I mean, when we first started, you know, I basically, like you said, I mean, I wrote this album at 16, 17, recorded it the last 3 months of my senior year in high school. I graduated, I turned 18. It came out at the end of 1995, September. And then we hit the road. And we were doing, like, for the first 5 years of my career, I was playing 250 shows plus a year. So, I mean, that's a serious schedule. And you can't help but, like, learn a lot, hopefully progress a lot as an artist and as a player and everything along the way.
My God, that schedule is just crazy. As a kid, you're not exhausted at that age. That's right. It's just pure adrenaline, right?
Yeah, well, back then, you know, I didn't have anything else to do except play music, and I had the opportunity of a lifetime. So we were doing like 250 plus shows a year, and I was honing my skills. And, you know, after 30 years worth of touring and making albums and stuff, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of growth in that. So what's cool is to celebrate this tour. You know, we're going out, we're playing every song on this record for the first time live in concert. But we also recorded a new version of the record called the 30th Anniversary Sessions. And we didn't recreate the original, but we also didn't reinvent it. We just said, hey, this is this album 30 years later with 30 years of experience and 30 years of maturity in my playing and performing and a different group of musicians, because I don't have the same band that I had back then. But the coolest part about it all is that these songs still hold up today. They're still just as relevant and just as good, and the audience and is just as excited to hear them.
Yeah. Is there a song, not necessarily on Ledbetter Heights, but is there a song in your catalog that surprised you by becoming deeply meaningful to your fans?
Well, I think the obvious choice is Blue on Black from my second record. That was a massive hit for us. I mean, we had a number one hit with it, and that song, just that song itself is like double platinum. So it's like, it reached a lot of people. And what was interesting about it was the way people related to it, because the song meant so many different things to so many different people. You know, people would write to me and they'd be like, I just lost a loved one and this song helped me get through it. Other people said, I was in a domestic abuse situation and this song helped me get through it. Other people are like, oh, I just, you know, broke up my relationship and this helped me get through it. So many different ways that people were able to apply the words to that song to their own experience.
I know you met B.B. King when you were about 15, Bo Diddley. Heck, you met our Chicago guy, Buddy Guy, at 14. You're the guy people lean into now when they want to learn something about the blues. You know, you're the guy that will now mentor the next generation. What's harder to teach, skill or feel?
Oh, I think feel. If you look at the internet, what the internet has done as far as musicians go, for sure, is it's opened up this this platform, and we have found out, if we didn't already know, which I don't think most people knew, is that there are a tremendous amount of talented players out there. There's people all over the world that can rip up instruments and just play their butts off, right? But I think the challenge is, you know, to actually be able to portray emotion and make somebody who's listening to you feel something. And the way that I do that is just trying to tap into my heart and just channel that energy and those emotions through my instrument. And I don't think that that's something that just anybody can do.
Right. I got to tell you, I married a farmer about 10 years ago. He's a metalhead. Most of my life was spent in country radio. Of course, I knew about your dad, who, in case you who are listening don't know, his dad was a disc jockey. And really, you must have been backstage and on stage and at so many shows when you were a kid. But so I married this metalhead. I'm country. We meet in the middle with the blues. And we've always had appreciation for him. But we've now seen the new generation come up, like Marcus King and Kingfish and Samantha Fish, and the list goes on. You're now that guy to them that B.B. King and Bo Diddley and Buddy Guy were to you. What do you think of the new generation of blues artists?
I'm excited about it. And what I really like is that they're doing – it reminds me – first of all, when I see these young artists, they remind me so much of my own experience. So, like, because I was a young person doing this kind of music, but I was bringing it to a broader audience because I was young and I had a different approach, and it wasn't traditional blues that I was doing. It was like blues was the foundation of my music, but I was trying to take it into different areas and keep it evolving and doing something that sounded current and relevant, you know, for the modern age. And that's what these young people are also doing as well, along with some of the other artists that are taking a more traditional approach. But it's really exciting to see, and I believe the genre is in good hands. I mean, I'm working with some of these people. I mean, I'm producing a female artist by the name of Allie Venable. She's another one that's part of that generation.
Yeah.
And I was helping her write songs for her next record and producing her next album at my studio. And so it's nice that, you know, I know that I opened up, you know, this for my generation. Like, I was the first kind of teen prodigy to, like, in the blues to, like, bring that mainstream blues sound back into the mainstream. And so I think that now it's an opportunity as I'm older to have a different kind of influence on the genre and maybe help some of these people along the way.
This is one of those songs that Kenny Wayne Shepherd wrote at 16, Deja Voodoo, and it was probably his highest charting single, I would guess, off of Ledbetter Heights. That's the album put out 30 years ago, and now, 30 years later, he's putting out a new version. Not a new version, just a more experienced version. So 30 years, my gosh. You go from being a kid to 30 years on the road. You marry Mel Gibson's daughter. The two of you have six kids together. Are any of those kids following in your footsteps? I mean, at what age did you put it?
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
Guitar in their hand.
Well, I mean, there's been guitars around my house since they were all born. So they have access to instruments. They're all musically inclined. And they're all kind of pursuing it in their own way and at their own rate, which is what I did. I mean, I picked up guitar and I practiced and I put in the work. Nobody made me do it, and I'm not going to make my kids do it. But I am curious to see what they will end up doing with their individual musical gifts, for sure.
Yeah. Hey, tell me about that $4 million guitar that Jim Irsay let you play, and then it ended up selling for $14 million. That must be the Kenny Wade Shepherd magic touch. But was it comfortably numb that you were playing on that?
Yeah, that's the famous black Strat that was owned by David Gilmour, played famously for many, many years in Pink Floyd. And then my friend Jim Irsay, who just recently passed away, he had bought it years ago and paid $4 million for it. And it was an all-time high when he bought it back then. As far as what the highest price that had been paid for a guitar. And so we did some tours with Jim, and we put together this all-star band. And in the middle of the show, they would bring that guitar out to me on stage, and we would play Comfortably Numb by Pink Floyd, and I would play it on that guitar. And it was a really incredible moment. And I got to do that many, many times. And, I made the same joke. I was like, well, you know, when the guitar belonged to David Gilmour, Jim bought it for $4 million, but then I got to play it for a couple of years, and then it sold for $14 million. So
yeah,
you know.
Here you are back 30 years later with not a new version of Ledbetter Heights, but it's nuanced because you're a different musician than you were when you were a kid. I know that there was only one song you sang on because as seasoned as you sounded as a bluesman at that age, you kind of indicated that maybe you didn't have confidence in your voice, that you might have sounded a bit too much like a kid.
Yeah, for sure. Like when I played guitar, everybody talked about how, you know, my guitar playing was well beyond my age. But when I opened my mouth to sing, I sounded like a kid, and that just wasn't the sound that I had for my music. So, you know, it didn't meet the standards at that time. So I was not shy about trying to find somebody else who had the voice that would fit my music. And I did that until right around my fourth album. But I did sing one song on the original Ledbetter Heights album called Riverside.
Yeah.
And when we made this new version, that's the one song, like, I love. I don't really have any regrets, and I didn't necessarily regret that version, but as I became a more seasoned musician and a producer myself, as I looked back on that record, that was the one song I was like, man, this could have been done differently. And so when we made this new version of the Ledbetter Heights record and re-recorded all these songs, I really went after that song and tried to give it a completely different treatment on this record. I'm really happy with the way it turned out.
So, yeah, you were a kid when you wrote Ledbetter Heights. And is there a song from that album that means something completely different for you today than it did in 1997?
Well, not really, because the ones that there are not really a lot of songs on this record that are like personal experience based. And the ones that are, the meanings really never change because the circumstances are what they are, you know. So I have had that happen on other records where I wrote a song about an experience and then something happened in my life and then I realized that all of a sudden this song means something completely different based on this new experience. But I can't say that that's the case for any songs on this particular record.
But can you tell me what one of those songs is?
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, there was a song called Last Goodbye that I wrote about a relationship that I was in. But then later on, I lost, you know, somebody I know died and I had a significant loss. And then those lyrics just applied in a completely different fashion for me all of a sudden.
You've been touring for most of your life. When the lights go down, you still get a rush?
Absolutely. I mean, me and my band, we make records so we can go play shows for people. We have a reputation of being a great touring band. And, you know, ultimately our goal is to get out on stage in front of the people and entertain you and show you a good time.
That's awesome. So when we see you in Desplaines, by the way, he's playing the Desplaines Theater. Great venue. Ron Onesti's bringing it to town on October 15th. When people leave that show, what do you hope they leave with? What kind of feeling, what kind of emotion, what do you hope they walk away saying?
Well, I mean, a lot of the fans on this tour have been writing to me and they've been saying that this is the best show that they've ever seen us do. Some people say it's the best show they've ever seen. I mean, you know, but like for me, it's like I just always want to blow people away. And especially for the fans that have seen us before, I'm really happy to hear, hey, we've seen you five times and this was the best yet. You know, it's like I love knowing that and hearing that we are still progressing and we're still getting better and we're improving every time we go out and we're exceeding their expectations. So I just want people to come out and feel the music with us and, you know, let us entertain you and like let you forget about the stuff that's bringing you down.
Yeah, absolutely. And it speaks volumes about the staying power of blues music.
Absolutely. I mean, look, this genre is over 100 years old now, and it's gone through many different sounds and evolutions over the years. And I think as long as there's people that are willing to, you know, maintain the integrity of the original sound of blues music, which there is an entire group of musicians that they just want to play traditional blues, but that there's also a generation that's coming along and trying to be innovative with blues as well so that it can continue to evolve, then I think it'll continue to be a relevant force in music.
This weekend is the Chicago Blues Fest. It's a free event in Millennium Park. They're going to do an event called 55 Years of Alligator Records with Little Ed and the Blues Imperials and Ronnie Baker Brooks and Nick Moss and Tinsley Ellis this weekend. What can you say about Ronnie Baker Brooks?
Oh, man, I love Ronnie. I've known Ronnie for a long time since we were both much younger, but he's still killing it. He's one of those guys. He's hot. And, you know, he always brings 150%. I love watching him every chance that I get to see him. And sounds like a stellar lineup. So people should be in for a treat.
Absolutely. Well, we'll see you in October. Thank you so much. The album is Ledbetter Heights, the 30th anniversary. Great to talk to you, Kenny.
Thank you very much.